Hello, I'm Eric Corman, League of Education Voters Communications Director, with Superintendent of Public Instruction candidate Erin Jones. Erin, the adopted daughter of two educators, grew up in the Netherlands, where her parents taught at the American School of The Hague. Erin earned her teaching certificate at Pacific Lutheran University, with endorsements in English, French, and English language learning. In 2007, the Washington Association of Foreign Language Teachers named her Most Innovative Foreign Language Teacher. Erin was selected as a Milken Educator of the Year for Washington State while teaching at Rogers High School in Spokane in 2007, and is one of 10 White House Champions of Change for Educational Excellence for African Americans. Most recently, the Washington State PTA honored Erin with their Educator of the Year Award in 2015. In her 3 years of serving as the Assistant Superintendent of Student Achievement in the Office of the Superintendent of Public Instruction, her work centered on developing policy recommendations and promoting instructional best practices for diverse student groups. Prior to that, she served as director of the Center of the Improvement of Student Learning. More info at erinjones2016.org. Erin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Gotta ask, if you're elected, what are your priorities for the first 100 days at OSPI?
So I really want to think about OSPI differently. I think we need a really clear vision at the state. And so I'm already thinking about who are the people who need to be at the table, but really be intentional about galvanizing those people. And I actually back up and I begin those 100 days probably the last week in November. So we have already spoken to Superintendent Dorn, and there will be a great transition plan in place. So it won't be as if I have to start on January 8th or whenever we start office. I'll have the opportunity really to begin those 100 days before I officially take office, which is very exciting because my greatest desire is to have a clear vision for our state, a blueprint, if you will, that can help us as a state think about funding, think about assessment, think about closing opportunity gaps. And I think that's something that's really been missing is a clear vision. The other thing that I want to think about in that first 100 days, I want to meet every person in that agency. I think as the leader of an agency of just over 400 people, it's really critical that I know who my staff are. And in 100 days, it's easy to meet all the people who work there. I've done that in my work as a school district administrator. I got out to all 13 of my buildings in the first 48 hours of the school year each year because I believe I can't make decisions for people I don't know in places I haven't been. And that is something I will commit to at OSPI. Who are the people working for me? What are their strengths? What are the challenges they're facing? And how can I support them, take away barriers, and then give them what they need to be their best selves?
Would you be digging into the legislative session at all? Because that's going to be kicking off, and it's going to be a doozy this year.
Absolutely. I have spent a lot of time talking with superintendents, talking with legislators about whether it's McCleary funding, the levy cliff that's coming up, assessment. So we definitely have to have some plans, and I've already begun having conversations with people. I know OSPI has a package of legislation already that Randy and his team have prepared, even though they'll be leaving office. But I think really providing some input and being available even before session starts to have conversations around how do we fix the levy situation. We have a levy cliff that's coming, and if it's not addressed by the end of this legislative session, we will lose hundreds, if not thousands, of teachers. What I hear from superintendents and other executives at school districts is in that first 90 days of the legislative session, we have to get that piece fixed. First 90 days. If it's not fixed in the first 90 days, lots of notices will go out to teachers that they've lost their jobs. And we just can't have that, especially in a time when we have a teacher shortage already and we have many classrooms that are being run by substitute teachers. We've got to get that piece right and make sure we have as many certificated, qualified, expert teachers in front of every child.
Yeah, there's a definite need for that. And we've also seen the impact of quality teachers on gaps. And I don't want to lead you necessarily, and you talk about gaps. But how would you, in your role of Superintendent of Public Instruction, assure that this pervasive achievement gap that really impacts, you know, Black and brown children and English language learners and special needs students is closed in Washington State? And how would you hold officials to that task?
So this is the work I've done for 25 years, closing gaps. You know, I think people look at me often and say, here's the Black lady. Of course, she cares just about Black students. I would say to those who are listening, I care about all kids. And gaps show up in a variety of ways. So they show up based on zip code. They show up based on race. And they show up based on home language. And that's what I'm concerned about. So what the gaps look like in Omak or Bridgeport is going to be very different from what they look like in Eatonville or Ellensburg or Vancouver. And so really having a plan to support the 295 school districts and be really intentional about where are your gaps in your particular setting and environment and how could we support you. I have trained over 20,000 educators in how to close gaps, and there are four things that I talk about everywhere. And these things are important regardless of what the ethnic makeup is of your community, regardless of your zip code. If we make sure in hiring and recruiting practices that we are intentionally putting the best people in front of our kids with the greatest need, if we get really intentional about that, how do we find people who look like, sound like, have experienced similar things as the students are serving, but also are really effective in instructional practice? We have to become intentional about not saying because you've been in the field for 10 years, now you get to teach the AP class, but because you've been really effective for 10 years, I need you working with the students who have the greatest academic need.
Yeah, how do you
And really do rethinking that? That, right? As state superintendent, I can't mandate that.
Right.
But what we can do is convene HR folks and principals who are doing the hiring and have some honest conversations about how could we authentically and intentionally do our hiring practices more effectively to be intentional about closing gaps. So first thing we have to do is the adults who are working with young people.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, we have to focus on authentic family and community partnerships and engagement, because there's so much research that families who are engaged, their students are more effective in school, and yet the school system has typically waited for families to come to them, PTA, parent-teacher conferences. And one of the things that I've always promoted is, you know what, we as a system have to be more intentional about going out to those families. And sometimes if I'm a family that doesn't speak English, or I didn't grow up in this country, or I wasn't successful in school myself, we have to do a better job as an education system building a bridge to those families. And whether that means finding interpreters to translate or really helping teachers figure out what are some more effective ways to communicate so that we can get families on board,
mm-hmm.
that is really important work to me. It's the work that I started doing at the Center for the Improvement of Student Learning at OSPI, and I'm really excited to say that that office has now been refunded. So there will now be staff at OSPI to help school districts kind of unpack how do we do family and community engagement more effectively.
Mm-hmm.
The third thing I would say is we have to address the needs of the whole child. Children come to us not just as intellectual beings. They are intellectual, they're social, emotional, they're physical, and they're cultural. And we have not addressed all those parts of children. And so one of the things that I am asking school systems to do, and I think OSPI could provide some guidance around this, is how do you set up a space where the social and emotional needs of students are addressed? How do you address trauma in students?
Yeah.
Because if kids have been traumatized or they've experienced a lot of adverse childhood experiences, we have to help teachers understand, how do I communicate differently with that student or provide them with different support? So as a system, we have to intentionally support school districts to be able to do that work effectively. And the last one that we don't often talk about is the cultural needs of students. If children walk into our buildings and the culture of that building is not at all like home, there's a piece of them that disengages.
Yeah.
I think our job at OSPI is to provide some guidance around what could it look like to create these spaces that are comfortable culturally, that feel affirming,
mm-hmm.
where students feel like, oh, I see myself, I hear myself in this space. So first was the adults, second, family community engagement, third, serving the whole child, and lastly, and maybe most importantly, how could we as OSPI really provide support around transitions for students? We tend to dropkick students from one level to the next, from preschool to kindergarten, from elementary to middle school to high school to life. Like, we're happy, you have a diploma, you're done, you're ready. Not so much.
Yeah, boxes checked.
Yeah, no. Because I have three kids who just graduated from high school. They're 19, 20, and 21. We are both educators, and still trying to navigate those 3 or 4 years after high school is very complicated. Not every student should go to a four-year college. Some students should have other options, but for families, it's really hard to figure out what is the best option for my student. For students, they're not really sure what are the plethora of options. And so if we as a system could provide some guidance around, here's some things, mom and dad, that you should be thinking about, auntie, uncle, grandma, community, to help your child transition from elementary to middle. Schools, here are some ways you might think about ensuring that those transitions are much smoother from one level to another. When students get to middle school, we are asking them to translate 5 and 6 times from one teacher to another teacher to another teacher. And I think OSPI could do a better job of providing support around what does the research say about creating common expectations. Those four things are what I will commit to as state superintendent to provide guidance on. I can't mandate those things, but what I believe, having been in the system so long, is mandates and hammers often are not the most effective way to change the system. It's how do we provide support? How do we provide incentives? How do we elevate best practices and share those? And that's really what I want to commit to.
And do you see a lot of pushback from either unions or people who are already in the education system in the state?
So to be honest, I think people are looking for answers. I've trained over 20,000 teachers, and this is not something that I went out and asked people, can I come do? 20,000 people asked me to provide training, whether it was an entire school district. I did 2 days with a particular district this summer. You know, I'm not working anymore technically. I resigned from Tacoma, but I did some consulting work this summer, and I spent 2 days in a school district on the east side just talking about these issues. They called and said, we are experiencing some gaps. We really need help and we need some guidance. And I got to spend 2 full days with a particular school district. And what I'm finding is people are really eager. They really want support. So there's not a lot of pushback. I would say I haven't ever experienced pushback in Tacoma. We didn't require people to come to training, but my partner and I in Tacoma delivered 40 different classes this year in culturally responsive practice, family engagement, and restorative justice. People are eager and they're hungry for support.
One thing that people aren't as hungry for is statewide testing, though. And you did mention that already. And I'm curious, if you got rid of statewide testing, as a lot of people have proposed, how would you measure the achievement gap?
I don't think we should get rid of statewide testing. But here's what I do believe. I was at OSPI as the SBA, the Smarter Balanced Assessment, was being adopted. But I started in teaching in the state with the WASL. And so I have seen the transition from the WASL to the HISPE MSP to the SBA. And what I would say as I've watched the transition is that we are allowing the test to drive our practice instead of us, the consumer, saying, here's what we want a test to do. And so my pushback is not going to be that we get rid of a test, because first of all, we can't. We need the federal expectations are that we have a state assessment. But I believe we need to be in control of that, and we need to push back on the company and say, you know what, right now this test is taking too long, and we need the results right away, and we need them in a usable format. And I think we as the consumer who's paying money to an organization or to a company need to drive how that test is delivered to us. And I think for the last few years, we've allowed the test company to drive how we receive it. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm committed to. We have to be able to measure the gaps. But I also think it can't be just a gotcha or a hammer, because my whole experience in Washington State has been in Title I schools that were deemed failing. Mm-hmm. And I know what it's like to be in a building where you're working often 50 and 60 hours a week, working so hard. And these young people come to you who don't have housing, they don't have clothes, they don't have food, they've experienced trauma, and we are now asked to do everything. And so I think the test is a measuring tool. But I think we need to get at a real focus on what are all the different ways that we could measure student growth. How do we engage families in that conversation? How do we engage students in that conversation? How do we make sure we're thinking about the social-emotional experiences of our students? And so for me, I would say we shouldn't get rid of testing, but what we need to do is put it in perspective. And what I would love to do as a teacher at heart is get back to teaching and learning. Mm-hmm. And how can we focus back on the whole purpose of school? Assessment is a piece of teaching and learning, but it has become the focus. And I want to get back to why are we in school and how do we connect young people to their passion and give them the experience and expertise they need to take that passion and turn it into a career.
Yeah, and we need a lot of tools to do that. And of course, the vehicle to helping kids take their passions and turn it into careers is the money, education funding. And that of course, is the big 700-pound gorilla that, you know, we're all looking at coming in January. And it's going to take billions of dollars to fully fund our education system. And probably what's going to happen in a best-case scenario is that a few billion will trickle in here and there over the next few years at best. But where will the money best be spent? And how would you, in your seat at OSPI, ensure that it gets there?
So I love that you said it's going to trickle in $2 and $3 billion at a time. Because I think if we have this idea that somehow McCleary, that we will be amply funded by 2017 or even 2018, I think that's naive.
Yeah.
So I love how you framed the question, because I think we need to be realistic mm-hmm. about our expectations. As I said earlier, levies are a huge problem in our state. And the dependence that school districts have to have on levies because the state is not fully funding teacher salaries. And so we need to have some honest conversations about that. And because equity for me is so important, the levies are baking in inequity into the system. So for those who are not really familiar with how the levies work, for example, in Bridgeport, where I spend a lot of time, it's a tiny little district. They graduated 47 students this year. And by the way, 47 students, 97% free and reduced lunch, 97% Latino, 97% graduation rate on time.
Wow.
And yet, their school district can't ever pass a levy because there is very little property there. Almost every student in that school district is living 2 to 3 families to a single wide trailer home. They don't pass levies, no bonds. And yet, they figured out how to close gaps in their district. So we need more money. But a place like Bridgeport is never going to be able to raise additional funds to do special things in the way that Everett will be able to, or Mercer even Island. Tacoma or Seattle, who always pass their bonds and levies. And so we need to get away from this dependence on levies because it does set certain school districts up to be at a disadvantage. And that is something I believe at OSPI, I need to be a voice for those places. The principal or superintendent of Bridgeport isn't going to be able to come all the way here and advocate. And so we need to take those stories. I need to send people out to gather those stories and bring them back and share with the legislature so we understand that the needs are so different depending on the community and that our reliance on a community being able to pass a levy or a bond, it's a terrible thing. And I think as a nation, the fact that we're funding schools on property tax is already problematic, but that's an issue for another day. That's the 500-pound gorilla in the room that I think is going to need to be discussed at the federal level because it is problematic that always our poorer communities or our communities that are not property rich will always be fighting for more. Equal is not equitable. Some of our communities are going to need more resources to allow students to have access to the same opportunities.
But how would you make sure the money actually gets to where it's supposed to go? Because, you know, that funding in districts can be opaque.
It can be. Each district is really unique. And so having worked at OSPI and now having worked in actually 3 districts, I taught in Tacoma, taught in Spokane, worked for Federal Way School District at the district level, and then in Tacoma again as a district administrator. One of the things I've learned is the needs in each district are very different. And so for us at OSPI to say, okay, if we give you additional resources, this is where it must go, I think is dangerous. Because, again, the needs of a Tacoma are very different from the needs of Spokane. And so I think we need to have a conversation with different voices at the table around how do we determine the different needs? And then how do we allocate resources based on the need to get at student achievement? Because maybe a particular district needs smaller class sizes right away. Like, we need to really focus on getting additional teachers. Maybe another school district has many more ELL students, and we need to make sure that there are more paraeducators who have experience in ELL or more family support workers. We need to find a formula that will allow school districts to look at their actual need and connect us to how is meeting that need going to serve students. Mm-hmm. And it can't be a one-size-fits-all because I think that's a really dangerous suggestion. I like the idea of figuring out a model that will allow a community, a school district, to really lay out, here are our gaps and here's how we best believe we can meet those needs, and then allowing us to work with them to determine how do we drive resources to those gaps.
You mentioned earlier the feds and how we need to change some things at the federal levels. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the big federal issues right now is ESSA.
Yes.
And in some districts, as a response to the Every Student Succeeds Act, they've discontinued paying for after-school tutoring. How would you and OSPI hold yourselves accountable for families and communities through ESSA implementation?
That is definitely a challenge. I think people thought when No Child Left Behind was changed to ESSA, Every Student Succeeds Act, that everything was going to be absolutely different. And it's not really all that much different. We'll have to see now as school districts provide input and communities provide input. I think this is an incredible opportunity to talk about what is accountability. Having run the school improvement department at OSPI for my last year there, one of the things that was a burden on my heart, having worked with the 15 most failing schools and districts, is that we've described accountability in ways that sometimes gets us away from actual students and working with students. And here's what I mean by that. There's all this paperwork that people have to fill out and prove that we're actually serving students. And sometimes that paperwork doesn't actually tell us what's happening on the other end. And it's why, for me, there has to be the data that we gather, but also one of the pieces of my vision is getting outside and actually physically getting into spaces and looking at the data in the context of the environment. So, for example, I taught at Rogers High School in Spokane, which was deemed a failing school. The year that I left, the principal was let go and they were forced to take in a new principal who's done really fabulous work. She's quote unquote turned that school around, but they did it in a very different way than the Tacoma schools that I had worked in that were failing. Every situation is unique and, again, happens in a context. And how I would like to see OSPI think about school improvement and accountability is, again, not just test scores, but what are all the different elements that speak to success? So how many students have access to AP courses or college in the high school, dual credit? How many students have a plan for post-high school? How many students are coming to school? So attendance is a big factor. I think we need to look at a number of different elements that we're already gathering data on and see what is the picture that is being told about this building. Because sometimes we don't take into account the out-of-school factors and all we look at is a test score. And what happens when we just look at a test score and we just look at what is meeting standard? There are so many schools that fail that are deemed failing because we don't measure growth. Mm-hmm. We just measure this one space that we consider meeting standard. And so I want to develop a framework of thinking about accountability that really focuses on growth and exponential growth. If we're going to close gaps, it can't be in one-year increments. We have to figure out ways and spaces to get 2 and 3 years worth of growth. Otherwise, we have students who are never going to catch up. Again, those are some honest conversations with superintendents, with leaders. One of the things that I want to do that I think is unique, it's happening in other spaces in the country, but I would love to find our superintendents, principals, school board members, and rising teacher leaders who are doing this work and convene them and allow them to share their stories of here's how we're closing the gaps. Here's a roadmap for how we have done this work, and then get them training other leaders. It's not as much about my leadership. I need to model. But if we can raise up leaders that people can see, their peers, their colleagues who are doing this work, and begin to share these stories of what works, then it doesn't become the hammer. It's about how do we partner you with people who are already doing this work. It's not about OSPI saying, thou will do these 10 things to demonstrate that you... It's about how do we connect like principals and like spaces and get them engaging, incentivize that talking, that opportunity for engagement. That's where we can really see greater results, both for our young people, but also for leadership and for instructional practice across the state of Washington.
That sounds like a big job.
You know what? This whole job is going to be really big, but here's one of the things I believe. I believe we can complain about what's not working, or we can get in and get our hands dirty. And that's why I threw my hat in the ring.
What frightens you most about the job?
Not being able to fix everything. So I think for me, there's so many places that I would love to get my hands into. And it's really going to be about prioritizing those things and picking 2 or 3 things that we can really focus on for the next 4 years and walk away knowing that I've left a really solid foundation for the next person with just 2 or 3 things. Too often in this, I also saw in the school improvement process, they wanted people to fix 15, 20, 30 things. And it's just not humanly possible to do all of those well. Mm-hmm. The thing that scares me, but it's also an opportunity, is how can I, with a number of voices and leaders around the state, really craft a plan to focus on 3 or 4 things as a state? And we're all going to have the same language about it, and we're all going to begin to think and strategize and work towards the same thing. And I think it's more than a fear. It's an incredible opportunity for a new dialogue.
Erin Jones is running for State Superintendent of Public Instruction. More info at erinjones2016.org. Erin, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.